Katie, as the time reaches 7 minutes to 6 o'clock, it's important to keep the connectivity going. And as we move from Starburst and, of course, Fab Radio International across the airwaves to an ace journalist and writer, Wondrous Stories fits into that, you see?
It does indeed.
That's nice. And that possibly means that we're going to speak to a gentleman who you have been privileged to be reading some of his words on paper that I dropped into your pigeonhole a matter of days ago.
Oh, yes.
It's William Coles! Yay!
Good evening!
William, in the studio we have ace, 10th planet correspondent, guru, general all-round wonderful chap, organising more conventions than other people have had hot dinners, Derek Hamley.
Yeah, I don't know what to say to that, just thank you. I try.
Sue Rice, who's just been doing fantastic duty today, looking after work experience coordinators. She goes into exam invigilation mode in a few months. It's just phenomenal, really. The woman is, you know, frankly, Dylan is just very lucky. And Bridget, obviously, get well soon. And, of course, Katie Dore, who we've just actually heard. These are the sort of folk who, you know, Emma Tinson and Tessa, they might sort of think, you know, this is the 18, girls. This is what you've got to aspire to. It's the key thing.
They're the people who are keeping you in order this evening.
They are.
Trying, I believe is the word. Trying.
Who knows where we're going. Anyway, tomorrow will be National Wear a Hat Day 2016.
Oh, hurrah.
So just make sure.
And I thought it was Maundy Thursday.
Nice one. Yeah, he's put together, you know, going back 2,000 years to the original Feast of the Passover, etc. Feast of the Passover, that is. No, it's actually Wear a Hat Day to celebrate the 7th year of Brain Tumour Researchers Wear a Hat Day. So there we are. It's an important thing. And as we mentioned, we'll be speaking tomorrow morning at 9:10 to British milliner Stephen Jones, OBE, who has designed for various folk, including Dieter Von Teese, Mick Jagger and Rihanna.
Very nice.
And Mick Jagger actually wore many hats, but still. Mr. Two-Bomb remains my all-time favourite William Coles book, which is probably why I gave Katie something completely different, but I gave you Dave Cameron's School Days.
Oh, yes.
Because we thought in these days of wondering, you know, what's Dave going to do now IDS has actually left and he's no longer got an irritable bowel. Oh, sorry, wrong little line there. And we've clearly got the presidential elections taking place as well, and Boris is going crazy. Boris, of course, features quite highly in Dave Cameron's School Days.
He does. I've just got the introduction of Boris and it really is spectacular. Mm.
Derek, if you're looking for a slightly left field but nonetheless extraordinarily good value appearance person for any of your conventions events, William Coles, I would put him as high as saying he matches the salsa dancers we gave you a few years ago.
How can we top it? That must be a must. We will talk after the show.
Exactly. We'll do those interconnections and so on. Katie, share with us, with William, any thoughts you might have had on the opening chapters to Dave Cameron's School Days.
Oh, it's a hint. It really is. I like your approach. I like the sort of very wry, quite cynical, dry humour in there, and the ability to just completely
rip the Michael out of the Conservative Party administration.
That's the phrase I was looking for.
Well, yeah, very sweet if you say so. They have it coming to them.
It's gleeful. It really is. It's got that wonderful. Is it Tom Brown's School Days?
Yeah.
That and it takes that style and runs with it. And it's fabulous.
Sue
really
is already
it.
Looking to obviously get hold of a copy, and I'm sure.
Well, do you know, you could have read my mind, but then I am, of old, in a previous life, I was a school librarian, so I've been eyeing that book up ever since I saw it. And I'm thinking, have to borrow this.
When you return, the Matt Munro and the.
The Mike Dooley. Yes.
You're like a bottomless pit woman. You know, I pass the book over to you. I thought Emma Tinson was bad, but you're just like a ball.
The Borg. I assimilate books. Yes.
I thought librarians would be really good at handing books back. You know, on time.
Not
and
the ones that they
fined.
Like. They don't.
It's only been 14 months, Sue.
But they're social glue, aren't they?
What they?
Yes. You only lend books to people that you want to keep in touch with. That's my general rule. Yeah.
And so it goes. In an email that Bill actually sent to us recently for the Huffington Post. In fact, Bill, would you like to just take this a couple of stages further with respect to this Huffington Post comment that you actually had on Tony Blair as opposed to Dave Cameron, etc. Share with us what was kind of your focus when this immediately sprung to your mind and your creative genius.
I was wondering, we could do with a poll to find out who is considered to be the most loathsome Brit alive in the UK today. Quite a number of contenders, but I reckon that Tony Blair would win it hands down as Britain's most reviled, human being.
And, harsh words, it has to be said, William. You know, as a revealed colon, the most awful Brit alive today, and what to do with him. It's not Stephen Moffat, don't worry, you know.
Yes, there is a sort of society at the moment called Arrest Blair, and a lot of people, if Tony's having a drink at the pub at the moment, somebody will go up to him and arrest him for war crimes. Which is quite a good laugh, but his bodyguards will see you off. And my idea was that instead you just throw a pint of beer over him. You pretend to trip over and chuck a pint over him.
Notice
this is clearly something that you've had a lot of time to think about.
I was simply employing the non-verbal almost communication there to indicate that Siren FM neither endorses nor takes any line whatsoever on the suggestion that was made by one of our ace correspondents there.
But go on, sit on the fence, why don't you?
You never know. I mean, it's a different life. You've also raised in this particular piece that it might now be timely to recall the almost mystical prescience of Tony's wife, Cherie. In 2008, Cherie deliciously took the time to reveal her predictions of the future, saying, amongst other things, that Tony would go down very well in history, and further to that, he'll be up there with Churchill.
Yep, exactly.
Turkey's president.
Thank you. It was suddenly bursting in the. They should know by now. We don't do.
They were trying to take you off the scent.
Yeah,
see?
Now you know why I do science fiction, don't you? That little bit of escapism. That's a safer place for an hour and a half on my own world.
But then again, science fiction also has its range of challenges in its own way. Still, never mind. You did actually suggest as well in piece that Jeremy Corbyn or George Osborne might be in the running, but these two guys do not meet the stringent standards needed to qualify for most awful Brit alive.
Oh, I don't know. Osborne's doing quite a good job. He's feathering his desk there.
No, but that is true. He does have a lot of people who hate him, but he's equally got a lot of people who think he's doing a brilliant job. Same with Corbyn. A lot of people think he's doing a good job. But Tony is his biggest fans, the Labour Party, they hate him more than anyone else these days.
And there you have it.
Yes, another stunned silence.
I was just curious insofar as the juxtaposition of your Huffington Post article with a couple of the pros and cons of shaving your various adolescent hairs, etc. You just think, what did you... Please, you know, check it out, the Huffington Post and the article, and you'll get a general idea in terms of what we're about here. Katie, any thoughts for yourself?
I'm a little bit traumatised, to be honest with you.
Just a little bit traumatised. What is a little bit traumatised?
A little bit speechless, but I'm recovering.
Has potential. Yes.
Potential. You need your smelling salts. Yes, they had 100 years ago.
Absolutely.
It's a slight attack of the vapours, but nothing more serious than that. Katie, already today we've put the challenge out to Elliot Morris to actually write a song, Ballad of the Two Rats. So that's there. I sort of thought I'd float it by the poets as well, but I thought, well, it could be too much excitement for one show. They could explode in all sorts of ways. But would you like to share with William how the rats are coming on? Because I'm not sure whether William's ever encountered or written about a fine, wonderful human being who has two pet rats.
They have doubled in number, in fact.
They've been reproducing?
They haven't, no. Other rats have done the reproducing, there are now four of them.
So there are now four rats, yes. And their names are?
Tony Blair.
George.
David.
Tony and Blair and George and Osborne.
Yes, don't tempt me one day.
There you are. Anyway.
Well, there's a whole tail in that, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Tail. Boom, boom.
Just one darn thing. Sue, it's just a tragedy. We have to lose you to actually go away, find some library books, keep them, and then actually give positive vibes to Bridget, of course, your fantastic daughter.
Yeah, she's a portly little lamb at the moment.
If she's been listening to this, she might have had a little smile, or maybe not. Maybe she's just embarrassed. Anyway, moving on. Katie, any other questions you'd like to put to William about life, the universe, or indeed why he hasn't written about rats in any of his books so far?
It's a shocking omission. It really is. And what are you working on at the moment?
I'm working on a book on rats. And the cornerstone of the whole story is that I was brought up on a farm, and we obviously didn't have a television, and the way that my brother and I used to occupy ourselves was we would catch rats in a catch 'em alive-o trap and then take the rat out into the yard, and the rat would have a 1 second start on our dog Fudge, who would then be let off after the rat.
Sometimes the rat
got away, but most times he didn't.
So it's like life, you know. Sometimes the rat gets you, and other times you get the rat.
Yeah, is there going to be another stunned silence?
No.
Has somebody got another attack of the vapours?
Katie's made of stern stuff, you know. If she wasn't, she couldn't cope with some of the PAs she's had to work with and so on over the years, really. No names, but more challenging than others. Derek, any thoughts from yourself?
I was wondering, when you're writing, do you have it silent? Do you play music? What's your perfect state of mind for writing?
I've been brought up in newsrooms with lots of screaming and shouting, and so I generally work in a hellish cafe with a lot of people screaming and shouting and no natural light. And that means that I just get on, do my words, do my 2,000 words, and then I get out as quick as I can. So, I don't want to hang around, but I don't need a little ivory tower to be working in. Not for me. No. Any old cafe, that's fine, with lots of people screaming and lots of coffee.
What more could you want? Lots of coffee.
Sounds, again, even more ideal for a 10th Planet Events convention. Really?
They're very noisy, and
exactly. You get the great unwashed.
Okay, well, sign me in.
Exactly. I shall pass on details and other things. So, Edinburgh, we obviously like to get the Edinburgh's perspective, because, let's face it, you might not be part of the British Isles for much longer if certain people have their way. Only kidding. I'm sure that the Scottish Nationalist Party are all set and ready to actually keep Sturgeon to the fore. What's life like in Edinburgh these days? Are you celebrating this wonderful Easter weekend that we're heading towards?
It's nice and grey. It's always grey in Edinburgh. You get about a month of sunshine in August, but it's grey. And then, you know, maybe once every 2 or 3 months you get this sunshine and think, wow, I remember that. But you really appreciate it because it's so grey and dreek most of the time.
Dreek, a word which has often been used to apply to some of the East Midlands weather, but, you know, that's for another weather forecast for another show, another time, and can be expanded to various weeks as well if required. So, before you go, would you like to put those last two questions to the Kohlsmeister?
I would, yes. Have you enjoyed your telephonic but slightly vaporous link with us today?
Nice touch.
I have loved it. It is always fantastic being on Siren.
And will you come back again and share your tales of political satire and rats?
Yes, I would love to. Next time I do write a stupid article which is going to enrage your listeners, I'll let you know.
Excellent.
Don't forget, of course, the Spare Air Handbook, some guides and thoughts to the spare air, obviously the birth of Princess Charlotte, etc., is still available. Plus, all the William Cole sort of texts are like sort of diamonds in the Scottish rough, the whole thing.
Industrial diamonds.
that too. It's brilliant stuff. William will return. Time for Enya.
And all the light will be, and all the future prophecy, and all the waves, the sea, and on the road are you and me, fading then all of them.
humming. Enya. Nice, neat way to actually bring us around to Ace correspondent, who started off with such a fantastic splash last week that we just physically had to say, come back again next week, which is this week, of course. Time, it's very stirring. Even Phil Dearness, who won't be joining us actually this week because Ilana Rain is sitting in for Phil Dearness, said he just gives every impression of being everybody's favourite uncle. He's just the all-round wonderful niceness that is Larry Nemeczek. Larry, welcome back to the programme. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. I guess I'm going to have to change my little marketing name to Uncle Trek then, I guess.
As opposed to Dr. Trek? I don't know. Dr. Uncle Trek? Either of those will be fine. Splendid. And
you're creepy. Yeah. Thanks for having me back, though.
You're quite right, actually. There is a slight creepiness to the notion of Uncle Trek that carries a kind of Uncle Festum routine. Larry, I presume you've never actually lit a light bulb by putting it into your mouth and actually... No, it's Adam's Family. Different writer entirely.
Right.
Although,
no, I haven't. To answer your question.
Having said that, you know, the notion of the Adam's Family meets the Star Trek universe, it could be what IDW are actually looking to. I mean, they've done Planet of the Apes and Star Trek. They've done Next Generation meets Doctor Who. Why not?
Yes.
Why not Kirk meets Gomez and Uncle Fester?
Why not?
Or even why?
In the studio, and I won't use the line, can you turn up your game? Because Larry was saying, can we improve it? I said, we could do Skype, but we'd have to do a pre-record, so we're weird. And it's the liveness that kind of keeps it going. And besides, over in Los Angeles at present, I think it's now 12 minutes past 11. Because it's...
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Next week, of course, we'll be back to 12 minutes past 10 because we will actually have our move into British summertime on Saturday night, just into Easter Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah, we spring forward. But
we beat you by about 3 weeks over here, I think.
You know, it's not who's first, as Neil Armstrong might not have said. You know, it's just we're engaging with that whole process. The clear, exciting thing, Katie, of course, is Larry is one of the fine folk who will be coming along to Sci-Fi Scarborough.
Oh, brilliant.
April the 9th and April the 10th. Sensational event, as we do like to geek beside the seaside. And indeed, we spoke to Steve from SFS, and he's almost beside himself with excitement as well. But Derek, of course, you are the granddaddy of convention holders, which are nice, small, perfectly formed, lovely events that I cannot sing your praises enough.
Thank you.
Great stuff from that point of view. Why haven't you invited Larry Nemeczek to a 10th Planet Event Society?
That's put me on the spot, hasn't it? I'll have to email you after the show. Be emailing everybody after the show, won't I? It'd be interesting. As I say, we've tried to expand the shows we've been doing. We've been doing lots of different things, but we always originally did do Doctor Who. But in the old days, you'd have a Doctor Who convention every 2 a year. Now there's about 3 or 4 a week. I don't know if you find that in America. I mean, you used to come over to the Gallifrey show at LAX. I don't know if you've ever done that at all.
The last five, I know Sean that puts that on, and even though we come from Trekland, he always says, well, our people have more than one interest.
That's
and
right,
I've
yeah.
gone over for the last six, seven, eight years.
This is the first year I didn't go. So I've gone for the last 15 years, so we've always gone over and taken guests and had a great time, and it's very much a big family there, isn't it? It's good fun.
Yes. And they could grow to a much bigger venue because it's like the Comic-Con. He sells out in...
seconds.
2-3 hours when they seconds.
Yeah, I think.
And he refuses to go to a bigger venue because they enjoy where they are. So there you go.
It's a nice venue and it's great from the airport, but we've always had great fun there. And I took my mum 1 year. It's amazing to go to America. You take your mum and people know you. It's kind of quite flattering, you know, that you come over from England and people know who you are. So yeah, it's always been a good show. And so I missed it this year, but I'll be going back next year.
Derek, you are meeting the Pope instead.
I met the Pope instead, so you know, I've got to be honest, I didn't mind this year.
Is it going to be Gallifrey and a Doctor Who convention with some wonderful Star Trek fans who appreciate infinite diversity, or is it going to be a case of meeting the Pope in Rome? You've got to work your way through that whole process. Larry, we spoke last week, of course, about the fabulous work that you're currently doing in terms of raising funds for the Con of Wrath, which was, of course, the event that still resonates, even nigh on 35 years after it kind of didn't quite take place, but took place because there was too much invested in it for it to fail. How's that actually going?
Well, it'll be 30 years next year, actually. Yeah. And as I said, we were trying to... we were trying to get things together. I've been working a little bit on it. I didn't have a rush date on it the last 4 or 5 years, and now we were wrapping up, trying to make the big 50th anniversary this year, and I decided that we really needed, for a couple of reasons, we needed just a little bit more time. Plus, the 50th anniversary was getting so crowded with events, the spotlight was, you know, pretty divided up, so I thought, well, we'll wait one more year and actually be on the anniversary of the event and be more comfortable that way. But no, it's going well. We're about to do a shoot in a couple of weeks and finally get the guy who was at the middle of it all, who got blamed for it by a lot of people, but who really was kind of affected by forces mostly beyond his control. But I'm just happy to finally get him involved. And then we have a couple of the big names we're going to make another pass at and get. But we're really happy to have, like I said, George Takei, Walter Koenig, and Michelle, and Harv Bennett, about 4 years before he passed, so we were very thankful to have him on camera. And Wendy Doohan and Carrie O'Quinn from the old Starlog magazine, and plus lots of fans and lots of dealers and almost all the organizers. So it's going to be pretty incredible.
And you mentioned one of my own personal favourites there, because we've talked about Starburst magazine, obviously, SFX magazine, we're regularly promoting and so on. It's obviously sci-fi now. But Starlog magazine, right. I thought, was a wonderful 1970s production. I first picked up my first edition, I think it was actually in a science fiction story in Edinburgh. And I love the kind of philosophy that Kerry O'Quinn actually gave to that, because his editorials, which you can still access online, they had a kind of philosophy which almost echoed some of Gene Roddenberry's thoughts in Star Trek. And for me, the best Star Trek were the ones which actually had an underlying philosophy, and there was a story behind the story, if you like.
Oh, yeah, well, definitely. And I forget that you all are a step removed from that. But Starlog, they brought the first issue out as just a one-off. It was a tribute to Star Trek in seven. This is amazing. Now, that was in the summer of 76. It was the 10th year anniversary of Trek. And they, before Internet, but before all the books and manuals and reference guides, they had a episode guide reference and some behind-the-scenes articles about Trek, about half the first issue, which didn't even intend to be a first issue. It was going to be a one-off. And it was so well-received that they started publishing quarterly, and then they, you know, bi-monthly, and then went to monthly within a couple of years. But that was presaging the huge, you know, the Star Wars boom. That was just a few months before Star Wars came out, and everything took off media-wise for sci-fi. But I don't know when Starburst and the other, like, magazines you all have
Starburst,
but I think they were all kind of in the wake of that. Maybe.
Yeah, Starburst actually launched in 77, I think, and that was, again, the Star Wars thing. In fact, it was Star Wars and Leonard Nimoy's Mr. Spock were actually on the front cover, and I felt at the time very much a British attempt at Starlog, but had a kind of British take on issues relating to that.
Oh, sure.
Help it. Again, it sort of worked out. I love the notion of episode guides. You know, we used to sort of episodes guides, so you'd work our way through that. These days, different line entirely. And I wonder, is it still a are we still happy people as a result of that? Maybe not. Katie, questions from yourself.
She's just so
astounded
did I
by speaking.
Gobsmacked
you did quite did. Literally, quite literally. This is the key thing. It's amazing. It's interesting enough. I just want to confirm: is the pronunciation correct for Nemechek or is it Nemesek?
It's Nemechek.
It is Nemechek. I thought so. Yeah.
And
it's just Phil Leonis was saying it's Nemechek. Anyway, Katie, have you composed yourself?
What do you think of the reboot?
Yes. Well, we did discuss this last week.
Oh,
but
sorry.
No. He might have changed his thoughts in the 7 days that have elapsed since then.
So I'm sorry. I didn't catch it. Yes.
What do you think of the reboot?
Oh, the movies. I want everything of. It took me a while to get used to it. By the time they came out, they had leaked so much of it. I think they were preparing people, and at first the idea was that they had just totally it had totally been a reboot, as in with Batman or Superman or Sherlock Holmes or Spider-Man or whatever the way they handle these franchise characters in Hollywood. Anyway, it seems like, you know, every 3 or 4 years they don't care. Oh, it's so-and-so got 5 years older, so now he's too old to play it, or she, and we just have to start all over again and just reboot. And I knew that would be sad with Star Trek, but, you know, what can you do? It's what the modern world is. And I was more concerned about the background. When it gradually came out that this was going to be back in time so they could be younger characters and also an alternate universe at the same time, part of me thought, well, that's a cheat. I want to know more. I want to know more real stories about these fake people. I don't want to know fake stories about these fake people. But the way it was handled in the long run was really, I think, better for the franchise, because they let the prime timeline keep going for all of the books and comics and, you know, all the merchandise and people's memories and people's emotional stake. It wasn't negated. I don't think, because I think the bottom line is, whether it's Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, or Sherlock Holmes or Tarzan, whatever it is, as opposed to Star Trek, those all began on paper, on the page, you know, whether it was comic book or novel or whatever. Star Trek began, like Star Wars, and like Doctor Who for that matter, but Star Trek began on screen with these human beings inhabiting these characters, and it was all of a take on its own to begin with. And so, you know, even in 86, there was talk about, do we reboot, now in our modern language, do we reboot Star Trek and have new people play these roles now that Shatner, Nimoy, and Dee are all getting older? And it was still a resounding no. These guys have some movies left in them, but the TV market wanted more episodes. So they had the brilliant, you know, decision to say, we'll keep Star Trek itself, we'll go 80 years in the future and have a, we'll just show further into their timeline, and they will embrace and honor Kirk Spock McCoy, but now we've got new adventures. And when you did that, you opened up Star Trek to all this storytelling where you don't need to reboot it. You just go to different corners or different sandboxes, you know, and tell a story, or different levels in time and tell a story. And that's kind of what they did, given the time frame. They thought that Star Trek was tired and they had to go back to the roots in 2006. Which I didn't agree with, a lot of people didn't agree with, but that's what the mainstream Hollywood, the guys, the suits and the money was thinking. So that's what they went. And that was J.J. Abrams' pitch to do that. So as they came out, they were, Nick Meyer, was just watching an interview I did with him a couple years ago. He was saying, you know, he enjoyed the first movie. He would have loved to have had the money that they had back when they were doing, you know, the Wrath of Khan and all the 80s and 90s movies. But I've grown to enjoy them because, A, I thought they were really well cast. Even though I didn't agree with the choices they made, but I honor the choices because it allowed Prime to go on. And the bottom line is, they have brought tons of new fans in who have gone and since, you know, discovered the original series, The Next Generation, and all of that. So, and now we're to the point where we have the new series coming on streaming, which we don't know yet, but it's looking like it won't be the JJ universe so much as Prime again, and we'll have, the bottom line is, we'll have series episodes coming. So that's exciting. So in the long run, that's kind of where I've made peace with it. And just enjoyed the fact that so many people are enjoying it.
And as we said last week, certainly the fact that the new series launches 2017 with Roddenberry's son involved with the whole thing, Nicholas Meyer, as you mentioned, from classic or Star Trek: The Next Generation. We've also got
Brian Fuller.
Brian Fuller involved with the whole thing. So the general DNA seems good. Derek, I know you're most a Who fan, but your thoughts on what Larry's been saying?
I have a question. Excuse me. I was wondering, do you think years ago, going back in time a bit, they missed a trick with not doing a spin-off with Commander Sulu? He appeared in the film, which I thought was excellent, and I thought that would have made a good little spin-off TV series, or do you think
And how
not?
Often has George Takei said, what about the Excelsior and Captain Sulu? Lord!
It was superb, and I think there was, I say, everything has a spin-off these days. What do you think? Do you think he could have done that?
Yeah, I mean, I remember that was a huge, huge hue and cry about doing Captain Sulu. And about the time that they swung to Enterprise, and then about the time that Enterprise was going down the ratings. I really don't know. I think the mindset at the time, and I think the vibe at the time really was a little bit of for the mainstream, not for the fan base, but for the mainstream that they would need. I think there was a perception that Star Trek was tired and needed to rest. And even though I might have disagreed with it, and I think also it's about format, because when you say bring that back as a series, are you talking about one of those hard cranking 22 or 26 episodes a series, as you all say?
Yeah, or even miniseries, mini movies. You know, do some TV movies, which we tend to do over here with Doctor Who. You had spin off with Torchwood, Sarah Jane Smith, etc. And I just think that was such a great character, and it's so well played in that film. I just thought it would have been excellent to
I think there were, now since then, now here's a couple things. Since then, you know, George Takei has totally reinvented himself. You know,
he's become a hero, at least a father of a hero.
Pretty much.
Yeah, well, he has a devoted following, totally unrelated to Star Trek. He came out, And as a gay and a civil rights icon, as an icon for remembering the Japanese American internment, and just as a happy guy who's embraced life and speaks out, you know, on intolerance of whatever stripe. And then to have his Broadway, although it recently closed, but to go through the whole experience of illuminating that with his Broadway musical. So now he's a Broadway producer. Before he had all that cachet was when that decision was made. But also, the landscape of everything is so different. Even 10 years ago, we were still pretty rigidly into, you know, series episodes. You mentioned TV movie, which people said, not just for that, but for other things, too. Other formats would work in a limited run. And it just wasn't a thing then. And today, that's totally been dynamited. You know, we have, because we had, not just here in the States anyway, in our format, not just the premium channels like HBO and Showtime and, you know, Game of Thrones, obviously, and you know, Sopranos before that. But now, what Star Trek is pioneering again is the streaming series, and those are limited. You guys are used to this. You've had this forever. But it's a new thing in the States, and for people to think of, you know, having less episodes and pouring more money in and having it be higher quality, much less a TV movie. Because some people would say a TV movie in the States, anyway, is a lower brand, is a lower quality product. But now we've had this limited series, and we've had more of them on some of our other commercial networks and the cable networks. Like the People with O.J. Simpson, which just ran on one of the cable networks here, was 10 episodes. So this idea of the mid-size complete run or mid-size season, and we see how it goes before we announce it, if this had all come up now, it might have had more impetus to do it. People's these producers and the money guys' imaginations about how to do something are just more open-ended and out of the box now than they were even just 10, 12 years ago. But at 10, 12 years ago, it wasn't going to happen.
Personally, I think it was a great shame that Gary Seven in the Assignment Earth character never got his series that was promised. You know, that was supposed to be a pilot for a whole new show. But just went away there. End of the second season of the original series of Star Trek.
Well, that's one of those things about they were fighting to keep Star Trek on there, much less anything that Gene Roddenberry did.
Exactly. Stay with us, Larry. We're going to give you a little musical test now, if that's okay. Nothing too traumatic, and we'll beam it across the airwaves. I think you might be able to identify the episode that this first emerged in, a piece of magical, mellow, calm musical delights. Heartwarming, even if you haven't seen the original episode. But the question for your good self, Larry Nemechek, is taken from which classic Next Generation episode was that particular piece of music? Are you still there, Larry? Has he gone?
Sorry, I had gone to mute during the music. Sorry about that.
Lord above. Jeez.
Sorry, just had to be out for a while.
Yeah, So,
well, after all that, that has to be the classic, the little flute, alien flute theme from The Inner Light.
A round of applause. Absolutely. The Inner Light. Probably one of my favourite Next Generation episodes. I think The Inner Light, Family, quite like Tapestry, and even, although I know people said the first season isn't, you know, quite so strong as it might have been, I like Where No One Has Gone Before, and even in the second season I thought The Royale, it has got things going for it.
Yesterday's Enterprise.
Yesterday's Enterprise, of course.
You're a fan of The Royale, that's interesting.
Well, yeah, okay. There's only one.
It kind of appealed in its surreal elements, really, finding that ancient astronaut.
And, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And as you rightly said, Derek, yesterday's Enterprise, I suppose, would be hailed as a wonderful thing. It's a return of Tasha Yar, for instance.
Of course, superb, yes.
But The Inner Light was very good, I think, from that perspective. And there were so many classic things. Of course, Star Trek Voyager equally had its share, and Sue, who had to leave us, sadly, a big fan of Seven of Nine. And, as I pointed out, the other great thing, it's just when you thought, would be Larry Nemechek at Sci-Fi Scarborough. What can he go? Garrett Wang, I believe, is coming. Is he coming over with you? Are you sort of escorting him by the helm, or is he sort of making his own way?
I would not deign to take responsibility for escorting Garrett anywhere.
Very sensible.
No,
yeah.
I think we're coming. No, I think we're on separate paths. He may be in country a little before I get there. So, I'm not sure exactly what his schedule is. But
Garrett Wang, of course, who played Ensign Harry Kim. In Star Trek Voyager, so that's great. Katie, your favourite Star Trek shows, moments, or series? Enterprise, Next Generation, Voyager, Deep Space Nine,
Deep Space Nine. I love Deep Space Nine, and I always feel it's a little bit underappreciated. Mm. But I was a massive Babylon 5 fan, so for a long time, I consciously boycotted Deep Space
Outrageous.
Nine to my shame,
yeah, exactly.
And then came to it late and went, "Wow, this is really, really good."
And nothing like Babylon 5. It's not humanity's last best hope for peace. You've got the Dominion and various other things. Yes, you've got space stations there. But if memory serves, Larry, Deep Space Nine was very much promoted as, whereas the original series was Wagon Train to the Stars, this was Gunsmoke.
Right. Well, even actually, they would say Fort Laramie, meaning that Gunsmoke was, the original series. Yeah, but regular characters on an outpost. That were on a crossroads. In fact, there's a piece of me that even if you get out of the Western theme, I think of it as Casablanca, because you have a crossroads of people coming and going and all the intrigue and espionage and the political turf became more a thing than that Western motif. But when you think about Quarks as the saloon and and you've got the sheriff and you've got the, the frontier doctor and you've got the mixing of the natives and the incoming, it is kind of a Western thing.
And thankfully, Sisko was made a captain. It took him a few seasons, but, you had to move from commando onwards. But another sort of episode, I think, for Deep Space Nine, I'd say Far Beyond the Stars. Very good. Yeah, I must dig that out.
Yeah, well, Katie, you're like, Katie, you weren't a fan, I don't know when you turned, but I know that DS9 is far more, has far more fans now than it did when it was on first run, partly because it was on such a bad time. Well, it didn't have a time slot. It was all over the country and got bumped around. Ira Bear, who became the showrunner after Michael Piller, they were good friends, and he always called DS9 the middle child
of Star Trek.
And said it wouldn't get it to do until years. He said years from now we'll have more fans than we do now, and it'll be way more popular than it is now. And he didn't even know about 9/11 and the darker turn of storytelling and serialized storytelling, all those things, Why were you not a fan? Was it because of the Babylon 5? They ripped off Babylon 5?
No, they didn't!
No.
The lawsuits are still going on, I believe.
I love The Next Generation, and I think it took me a while to sort of adjust to Deep Space Nine and the darker tone of the storytelling. And it was the idea of having the story arc, which I loved with Babylon 5. And I didn't think at first that Deep Space Nine carried it off quite as well. But going back and watching it later on, actually, they did it superbly.
I think it took them a couple of seasons to get it organized.
I don't know that the first season. Yeah, it took them a couple of years. Well, they had to find their own tone. And you got to remember, it was like having the star athlete big brother and you're the geeky brainy kid, or backwards. They really had to get out from under Next Generation's shadow and find their own footing. But they were starting to do that by the second season, absolutely.
And adding the Defiant and Wolf, I think that's when it changed. That's what made it far more, I thought, interesting.
Yeah. Well, Worf makes everything interesting, really.
Of course.
He should have dropped into Enterprise as well. I'm sure there was a place for him some way, shape, or form. A final plug for Sci-Fi Scarborough. Well, at least another plug for Sci-Fi. Not only do we have Larry Nemechek there, we have Claudia Christian from Babylon 5.
She was so magnificent.
Yeah.
Susan Ivanova's there. As you can see, Garrett Wang will be there. Richard Hatch, of course, from Battlestar Galactica, will be speaking to Ilana Rain in a few moments with respect to that. Norman Lovett from Red Dwarf, Joseph Gillen from Game of Thrones, Barnaby Edwards from Doctor Who, Dan Starkey from Doctor Who, Simon Fisher-Becker, of course, of this station as well, also from Doctor Who. That's Sci-Fi Scarborough. Of course, Derek will be promoting your own events very shortly, but as you can tell, we're just a little bit excited. Beside Sci-Fi Scarborough
always
comes
before. Interesting to know what the opposition's doing.
I like to be there. It's complimentary. That's the boring. Complimentary. Larry, it's been sensational as ever, but time, that nebulous... We need the city on the edge of forever to...
I know.
There's sort of Timothy so many of them.
Where's a big concrete donut when you need one?
Do you know, I say that every time I come onto the Lincoln campus, and one day you'll actually say, yeah, it needs a concrete donut, quite clearly. You know, a question, since before your sun burned bright, I have awaited a question.
Yes.
Anyway, apart from that, I won't be saying let's get the hell out of here, but what a wonderful ending. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link on this, your return to the Midweek Drive? Has it been okay for you, Larry?
That's exactly how I would put it.
Oh, it'd been okay.
reasonably, no. I love this. I love talking to you guys. I hope that, as the Guardian said, many first journeys are possible. I'd love to come back sometime. But I look forward to seeing as many of you all, as many of the listeners, at Scarborough and talking about all Trek and my projects and everything as we can. So thank you again.
Certainly, Steve, one of the gurus of Sci-Fi Scarborough we're in touch with, will be speaking from that point of view. I take it then you will return and become pretty much a semi-regular as far as the Midweek Drive are concerned. Will you return, Larry Nemechek?
I would be honoured, sir.
Yay! Round of applause, please. Yay!
Was a hell. I reach out and take my piece of the cake.
As we're looking for sanctuary, is that sanctuary in New York? Is it in Hawaii? Is it in Los Angeles? Ilana Rain, have you got sanctuary?
I'm deeply protected in sanctuary, yes.
Nice, very good. And as we realised when Phil Ian said, I've got a board meeting, so please could Ilana step into my features. Of course, she was already booked for the earlier part of the show, but hopefully has managed to catch some of a little output. Ilana, before we go to director's notes in full force, introductions, we have, of course, the fabulous Derek Hambly in the house, Lord above. Sorry, Derek, for a moment.
Oh, yeah.
I was just thrilled by the fact that the output on Siren gets even better because after 7 o'clock, Katie stays, we go, and Katie's joined by Ryan the Waterbringer.
Fantastic.
It's his new secret.
It's
the legend.
Ryan,
that's
the Waterbringer. Exactly. It's very good. So, Ilana, have you caught any of the production, or has it been a case of, no, I'll just have to catch up on podcasts?
No, I did manage to catch several segments, which I enjoyed very much. Yeah.
So then share with the team, Ilana, because at the end of the day, you are a tremendous director. You've directed Ellipse, We Are All Cylons, you're an ace photographer. You've recently been to Hawaii. We'll find about that and your recent breakfast meeting with Phil Leonis. How's the show been for yourself?
The show has been very enjoyable. It actually spurred a lot of tangential thoughts. I just started writing notes that connect to Hawaii and connect to what's happening in politics, which connects to my obsession with sci-fi and Star Trek. So, you know, I think there's a lot to talk about.
So the reins are yours, Ilana. Where do you want to go first?
Well, you'd like some thoughts on the show?
Yeah.
Well, I'll start with the most recent Larry, your guest, it's always great to hear someone talk about Star Trek with authority. You know, I've never made any claims to know the details about, you know, the show beyond, you know, deep appreciation starting from childhood. And, you know, it's interesting because this ties into Hawaii. We were staying at who's a person named Buck, who soon became a very fast friend of ours. He rents out his amazing house. I'll tell you more about that later. And he found a Star Trek comic book that was left by another guest, and he just handed it to my older son, and he read it, no comment. And then just out of the blue the other day, I was asked to chronicle in detail the story of the Borg and how the Borg differentiated between just your average run-of-the-mill zombies and Cylons. And then it immediately segued into a request to recapitulate the school-to-prison pipeline issue that we have here in America. So this all said from my 8-year-old, and so I want to credit Buck, and thank you, Buck, I believe is actually listening, for handing that Star Trek comic book. So back to Larry, you know, he talks about reboots and, you know, how the landscape of television has changed so much that allows creative producers more freedom in, you know, how a show is structured, that it's not necessarily, you know, oh, we have to have 22 episodes and it has to go into series, blah, blah, that you have freedom for miniseries. And, you know, I just find that so, so hopeful and wonderful, especially in terms of science fiction, and that there is so much leeway in these deep, deep mythologies that we have with the Star Trek universe, Star Wars, and Battlestar Galactica, that there are many offshoots, that we can take a character and create a whole universe around that character in interesting and creative ways, unlike, you know, slightly more cynical ways of, you know, say Batman versus Superman, and like, oh, we better throw in a superhero here or there just to possibly have you know, some franchise opportunity. I just see what people like Larry are doing, and also people like Paul Ripley are doing, your other guest with Alternative Radio, creating niche markets, is very hopeful and exciting for the cultural landscape, especially in terms of science fiction.
Well, as you're well aware, Ilana, ever since we actually met in Lincoln, England, and we had the first of your wonderful screenings of We Are All Cylons, we've always felt that in our own way we can actually make that difference. You know, and that's what we're all about, making that difference and hopefully make it go a little bit further. And, of course, inevitably, Battlestar Galactica connection with Star Trek, Ron Moore, the Battlestar Galactica reimagining. Ron Moore, of course, cut his directorial chops, so to speak, on Next Generation and more. So
absolutely.
All works splendidly. Katie, any thoughts from yourself or Ilana?
Tell me about We Are All Cylons, because I've yet to see it.
Oh, well, I can send you a private link then through Alex if you'd like. Well, it's basically a story about our relationship to technology seen through the fandom of Battlestar Galactica, and I interviewed 4 of the final 5 Cylons. Well, have you seen the series?
I
focused on the characters that believed they were human and then only realized they were not human and indeed Cylons, and was fascinated with just what that meant as an actor and also the implications for us as people, you know, what it means to be human in this age of rapidly accelerating technology, and I would argue in an age where we are fusing with technology in pretty concrete ways. So by all means, watch it.
Will do, definitely. And tell me, did the actors know from the outset that their characters would turn out to be Cylons, or was this a shock?
No, it was decided. Many of them were told way into the series. And Michael Hogan, for instance, Colonel Ty, at first he really objected, and he argued with Ron Moore about it, and that's what Michael told me. And, you know, as I've subsequently spoken with these actors, you know, because I did this film several years ago, and I'm, you know, we're all on to new projects, but every now and then I do reconnect with them, and they're just wonderful people, and they all still talk about it being really as the role of their lifetime. So, you know, it's a very special show, and but, you know, it has its place in the cultural landscape at the time.
Derek?
Would you like to see Battlestar Galactica come back again? I think the last one, I think, got weaker as it went along. It started off very good, in my opinion. But would you like to see it brought back again?
The movie
no,
reinvented?
No.
No,
I'm not particular. Well, personally, sure, yes, I'd like it to exist. But personally, I need to. No, I don't, because I need to. I'm in a different thing now. I have to. I think creatively, there's some danger in sticking with something that is trying to reinvent or just try to reinfigure material that you've already covered creatively. So. That's pretty much how I feel about it.
Okay, well, yeah. We could go on to actually inquire of Ilana what she was getting up to in the woods of Griffith Park for morning coffee, or... we could go to Hawaii!
And blue.
Thought we were going to go Hawaii 5-0 and are really up, but no, we went Elvis Presley with Blue Hawaii. So what?
Love it.
Yeah.
Excellent choice. Well, I happen to have two of my dear, dear friends listening from Hawaii now. There's Buck and there's J-Ro, and Buck is where we stayed at his house, and it's I'm going to plug it because I swear anyone right now in the UK, if it's even slightly overcast, just even imagining Buck's place. It's called Sunrise Cottage in Pahoa, or Hawaii. Just say Pahoa, Hawaii. Just imagine just being in an incredible, calm, warm, beautiful house that overlooks the Pacific Ocean, that's just a few steps from the ocean, with a host that will just treat you like family instantly. So I say go UK. To Hawaii. And then sitting with him is J-Ro of JRohealing.com. And I want to tell you about how I met J-Ro, and this is the entire reason we went to Hawaii in the first place. I met J-Ro when I was researching online when I was living in the Arizona desert for my film Alignment Project. And I typed in Google alternate realities just to do some basic research, you know, everyday stuff. And I came across J-Ro's blog and his article on alternate realities. And J-Ro himself is a energy reader and clairvoyant, and not any sense of like storefront psychic. This isn't where we're going with that. It's really intuitive, therapeutic work based on presence of energy. So J-Ro himself doesn't really go into alternate realities, and that was part of what was intriguing to me. Is like, I'm too busy being here right now in the present moment on Earth. So that kind of struck me. And I read his blog for about 6 months and finally reached out to him. And as, you know, internet to internet. And then we spent about a year in correspondence. And we finally had a meeting in New York City. And about an hour before the meeting, I texted him and I said, I'm not sure you're actually real. And how do you know I'm not actually a hologram?
Nice question.
We've never met face to face. And we both were just tripping out a bit, and we're like, wow, the internet brought us together, and we're about to meet IRL.
In
you know?
Flesh
and
space, just in real life. Amazing.
In real life. And we did. And then, you know, next thing you know, a year later, I'm in Hawaii with my entire family. So, so Hawaii itself is as close to a utopia in its early structuring phase that I've ever been to. It actually felt like it's a newly terraforming planet. There's lava everywhere. This is on the Big Island near Kahana Beach. But unlike a terraforming planet in all of our imaginations, I did not once see an officer of the law. No police, no sheriff, no...
Where's Steve McGarrett and the rest of the 5-0 people, for goodness sakes?
No, they're somewhere in the fancy part, like in Maui. I don't know.
Okay.
I did not see... And I'm not saying it wasn't like this lawless... You know, it wasn't chaotic. It wasn't anarchy. Although, you know, there definitely, as J-Ro says, you know, there's scenes from, you know, the beach is like, you know, a scene out of Mad Max. You know, like there were just tattooed peoples and fairies and, you know, half nude. It's just like incredible. But, you know, you'd think a terraforming planet, you know, there's got to be law and order and new society building. So it's a free place, and it is constantly changing. We all know, you know, life is about change. You know, we try to stay present in the moment. But this is a place where you can think, you know, hey, I've got this beautiful oceanfront house. And then, boom, the volcano erupts, and all of a sudden, there's a mile of lava now between your house and the ocean. So you no longer have that beachfront property, and in fact, you're surrounded by hard, encrusted lava.
That's always a challenge.
Yeah, it is really, really trippy and incredible. And then there are places where, on the island, where the tides have come in and there are these abandoned houses. I mean, it's just this one big film set. It goes from utopic, bucolic islands to, you know, houses and you know, these lanais with just incredible foliage.
And that's clearly why the Lost TV series was filmed in Hawaii, amongst other things. As well,
yes,
as, of course.
It can switch really, really fast, and I would love to make a film there.
It will happen.
Much.
Buck and Jay Rowe from Sunrise Cottages, Pahoa, and also Buck, who actually wanted to find out about the real story of the Borg, we salute you. Ilana, we salute you too. What are the last two questions we need to put to Ilana Rain, please? Derek Hanley.
Have you had a good telephonic link with us today?
I did, absolutely. And Alex, next time I need to talk to you about my visit up to the observatory in Mauna Kea.
Shall we do that next week, Ilana? Shall we book
part
you now?
Part 2 of sci-fi brain melting in Hawaii.
It sounds like a movie in itself. We'll go for that. We'll rearrange the things. We'll be rescheduling our own thing as we spring forward in UK time as well. Thanks certainly to Cameron Tilbury, Frank Allen, Paul Ripley, William Coles, Larry Nemechek, and Ilana Rain, and to you, dear listener. And thanks to Sue Royce and to Katie Dorr. Katie's still, she's not going away.
No.
She's
stuck with me.
She's going to, well, I'll be going away. I'm going off to Hawaii, actually. Fancy a trip to Hawaii, Derek?
Love to, sounds amazing.
Be off there straight away. Book the flights now. Ryan will be holding the fort here. Ryan, the water bearer. It does work in every sense. Thank you, Ilana. We wrap up with Some Guys of All the Luck, Robert Palmer. Thank you all. Can we all say bye bye?
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Aloha.
Yay. Oh, you see, she's even got the, you know, no book 'em down, no murder one, two counts. Very positive. You know, we haven't even had a chance to actually feature any of Mike Dooley's The Universe Today thoughts. It's just been that particular kind of show. Never mind. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Splendid. And
wonderful.
Yeah, just even more doubly wonderful. We could talk up to the news if you wish, but I don't think so. We've got the ident coming through in 5 seconds from now. 4, 3, 2. Oh, the excitement. Take it.
On 107.3 FM, this is Siren FM. So